This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am John Batchelor, also Gaius, and I welcome Michael Vlahos, a.k.a. Germanicus, as we sit by the Thames, as is our custom on Saturday evening, and philosophize about our empire, the Roman Empire, 90 AD in Londinium, and look ahead to the American Empire built on the foundations of our Roman Empire 2,000 years hence. The American Empire at the turn of the American calendar, the Julian calendar, still influenced by our mistakes and our successes. The American Empire is troubled and challenged and, at this point, not entirely focused on a crisis building in Europe, called Ukraine crisis, but it involves other states and is a part of the larger story of the end of the Cold War in the 20th century, and yet the locking horns of the powers here in the early 21st century. Russia's a power, America's a power, China's a power, France and England and Germany are certainly powers. And the powers now are faced with what appears to be demands by the Russian power. And the NATO forces, the NATO collective, is to answer Mr. Putin's demands that the military infrastructure put into place since 1997 be rolled back. In brief, NATO stands down. That's the demand. In addition, Mr. Putin demands that NATO promise, guarantee, like a treaty, that Ukraine and Georgia will never join NATO. Again, a demand that NATO must stand down from its ambitions. Germanicus, a very good evening to you. The demand is straight up power. The geopolitical power of the Kremlin demanding of the geopolitical power of Brussels, representing all those European powers plus the United States. How do you see this right now, Germanicus, given our lessons here in the Roman Empire, that when someone calls your bluff, you better have a plan? Good evening to you.
Good evening, Gaius. And I think we are stuck in such an ancient sort of mythological framework that we are unable to see the actual dynamics of what is going on today, because we're looking at today's events through the eyes of America and the Soviet Union during the Cold War. And there are people comparing the dynamics today to the dynamics of the Berlin crisis in 1961. And when the U.S. looks at its relations with Russia, it really does seem to be completely stuck in this old framework of Russia as the dark side of the force, and NATO and the United States as the forces of good, the forces of the light. And it really obscures the reality, and it prevents us from gaining the necessary insight. For example, during the Cold War at its height in 1961, arguably during the Berlin crisis, it was Khrushchev that was trying to overturn the initial post-war agreements on the status of Germany, and to do so in a way that would undercut America's credibility and capacity to hold NATO together. And it was an offensive move. He was trying to revise the balance of power in favor of the Soviet Union. It was aggressive. Today, it is Putin who is on the defense. The United States and NATO have been on the offense since the 1990s, and they've moved, as it were, the goalposts of what is ours and what is yours in a very aggressive way. It didn't involve any sort of military coercion, but essentially NATO expansion or enlargement, as it's been called also, is essentially taking elements that Russia had won through centuries of struggle and conflict to create a buffer for itself as a notoriously insecure great power, And now we were advancing in such a way as to take away everything and push them up against the wall. And this is something that Putin, above all, who laments the decline in Russia's Great War status and sees the fall of the Soviet Union as the greatest calamity of the 20th century, well, he isn't going to stand for surrender. And the U.S. Continues to look at the standoff with Putin as though he's the aggressor, that he's trying to take over a fledgling democracy that wants to join NATO and the EU, and so he's the aggressor. But in fact, that is not true. It's quite the opposite. And what's going on now is very reminiscent of taking Russia back to the boundaries of the 17th century, when Poland essentially owned the Ukraine, and Poland had its boundaries deep beyond Kiev and close to Donbass. And essentially, this is the kind of activity strategically that puts Putin and the Russian sensibility into a kind of existential place that it cannot accept. And the U.S. assumes that, like Cold War crises, Berlin being the zenith of tension and paranoia, that at the last minute Russia will back down, as Khrushchev did in 61. But Khrushchev was on the offensive, and he could easily back down. And he found a kind of compromise through the Berlin Wall that staved off the crisis that was going on then in East Germany. And Putin has no such capacity to back down. At this point, it really is up to NATO and the U.S. to come to some sort of compromise that will satisfy at least the basic needs of Russia and take it away from this existential position. But the U.S. is not really letting up. And NATO, with Poland in the fore here, are willing to pursue a course that could ultimately lead to a conflict.
Well, let's look at some instances that Mr. Putin has in mind when he confronts NATO. Khrushchev backed down in 1962, withdrew the missiles, withdrew the IL-28 nuclear-capable bombers, chastised and ignored Castro, backed down in front of his presidium. 2 years later, he was removed. And right. Malinovsky, the general-in-chief at the time of the presidium's crisis in Cuba, said afterwards it is the most humiliating experience he ever had as a Soviet officer, as a Russian officer. Putin has learned that lesson. Let's come to the 1990s, the KGB coup against Gorbachev in August of 1991. They did not arrest Gorbachev. They did not execute anyone. They thought the people would be with them. They backed down, and dustbin of history. Soviet Union went away within months. And then we come to Yeltsin, who was elected right before the dissolution of the Soviet Union and the lowering of the red flag over the Kremlin. Mr. Yeltsin becomes an extremely impressionable and persuadable leader at the hands of Bill Clinton and other members of NATO, so much so that when he appointed a KGB colonel to be his vice president, it was an acknowledgement that he no longer was capable of directing the Russian Federation that was breaking up at the time. Now, Putin has learned from all of those instances that backing down leads to ignominy and also exit. Therefore,
right.
Backing down is not, I don't believe it's an option now in
it's
Moscow.
It's not. And, you know, with Cuba, as an example, that was a gross adventurism. That's the term the Soviets used. And in a way, that allowed the Soviet Union to back down because getting rid of Khrushchev kind of washed their hands of the whole thing. It was really a foolish overextension on the Soviets' part, pushed by Khrushchev. But this is right up against the wall. It is a home territory, literally, because Ukraine has been part of Russia since the 18th century. So we are pushing against their home territory. And Putin also knows how in the George W. Bush administration, and then even under Obama and Mr. Biden as VP, that the plans were in the State Department to engineer a coup to overthrow Putin. So all of this stuff is put him in a position where he can hardly back down. And what he's asking for is a stand down by NATO from its push into the Orthodox Russian sphere. And also he is willing to let go of control, de facto control over Ukraine, which is what he was actually pushing for in 2014 to get Ukraine into the Eurasian Economic Union. And so it is, to me, a kind of a compromise that might work, but we're not anywhere close to accepting this as a legitimate outcome. And that's what makes me worried. And there are three other elements that are in the background operating in our consciousness in the West, and they're very troubling. First of all, the farther we get away from the environment of the Cold War, in which we were all desperately in terror of nuclear war, the farther we get away from that fear of nuclear war, the more blasé we become about war. And also, the farther we get away from World War I and World War II, and the idea that these wars were calamities that came within an inch of destroying civilization, we're so far from that kind of consciousness now that we have become complacent in that dimension as well. And finally, we've come to believe almost reflexively in the idea of short, victorious wars that are decisive within a very short period of time. And we've practiced that sort of war. We did it in Desert Storm. We did it in the invasion of Iraq. And we believe that any kind of high-intensity conflict will be brief. And that isn't necessarily true. In fact, it's very rarely true. The Franco-Prussian War being an exception in which the war was relatively short, the fact is that wars between powers after a long period of peace, meaning decades, like we've had since World War II and an actual, you know, equivalent enemy, tend to not only escalate, but tend to drag on because there's too much at stake for either side to give up until they're forced to. And so that what that means is that we are pursuing policies that are riskier than they should ever be, and in large part because we believe in fallacies that are going to get us into trouble, one of them being that if we show resolve, meaning puffing up our chest and sending thousands of Javelin anti-tank missiles, for example, will deter Putin. And the second thing that we do is we believe that letting the crisis come to a head, you know, will lead inevitably to negotiations, because just as Khrushchev backed down over Berlin and then over Cuba, so Putin will back down now. And we believe that forcing a weaker enemy to submit will lead to negotiations and an outcome, and of course, by extension, an outcome favorable to us. This is magical thinking that, like the short war idea, fits our preferences, our ideal. Right. And that, if you pursue fallacies as the basis of your policies, you are, by definition, in deep trouble.
Michael Vlahos is Germanicus. John Batchelor is Gaius. Gaius and Germanicus will now put down their cups of wine and wander onto the amphitheater. We had a surprise last week. I was expecting more Greek preachiness, but instead a wonderful troupe of comics showed up from Rome, quite farcical, reminding me of a certain headline in the New York Times right now that points to the fact that the government in Kiev is led not only by a former very popular comic actor, but also surrounding him, his lieutenants, are members of his comedy troupe. So we can hope for the same sort of farce when we attend the amphitheater tonight in Londinium, 90 AD. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.